So I'm interested in how we can build a more peaceful future for Australia and for the region, for the globe. And I think that the path we've gone down since colonisation, the invasion of 1788, has put us on a path of perpetual warfare and violence, which builds neither peace nor security. And I think that we need to look at other ways of doing things globally and as a country. So what I think needs to happen is, at the moment we're in this race for resources around the world, and Australia's thrown its lot in with the United States. Since colonisation, we've had a history of throwing ourselves in with greater powers. So before World War II, we went to war wherever Mother England went to war, and since World War II, we've gone to war wherever Uncle Sam's told us to go. And it's led to death, destruction, mayhem, and an insecure and destabilising world. It's time we did try to do things a bit differently. And that requires the active engagement of citizens in Australia.
What do you mean by active engagement?
Well, last year I travelled to Palestine, and I'm deeply interested in the issues that are confronting the Palestinians and the occupation, as well as the peace and security of Israelis. There's just severe oppression and insecurity happening in the Palestinian area. And I was thinking about the best way that I could help the Palestinians and other oppressed people in the world. And I can use some of my time and energy to go over there and be with them and use my white privilege. But probably the best way to help them and to think about how we help the oppressed people is to change the way things are done in the parts of the world where we use the most resources and we buy and sell the most arms. And Australia is one of the largest arms buyers in the world, and we use those arms to bomb and kill lots of people. And we facilitate the development of arms through companies such as Elbit, to be used in the oppression and murder of lots of innocent people. So we need to change our politics and policies here to help the people in the oppressed areas of the world.
What sort of politics and policies would you put in place if you had the power?
For one thing, I would cut Australia's military spending. The big thing that's been on the news, rightly so, is the spending of $14 billion in the future on the Lockheed Martin Joint Strike Fighter. I mean, this is a plane that hasn't even flown yet, and Australia's already committed to spending that money on it. And even if you think domestically about what that money could be spent on in terms of building Australia's education or healthcare networks, we could do lots better with that money, not to mention aid to breed development and security in our own region. So I think that's misplaced resources that feed into this social and environmental destruction that we've embarked on as a white society. And so I would like to see a policy where we cut the military spending and go for something that promotes real security. And the other thing I would do is I would push for a more independent foreign policy, free from the US and possibly even in the future Chinese influence. I think Australia's got great strength to build an independent policy and to build multilateralism with other powers in the region, such as Vietnam and Japan, rather than throwing our lot in with the United States and going wherever they go. It's this view that we have of ourselves as a white outpost in the Asian region that we need to change. And that's something that would take time, but it's something I would work on if I was in charge, so to speak.
Last year, you were engaged in some direct action. Can you tell me about that?
Last year, Graham Dunstan and I trespassed, along with other actions that took place in the Rockhampton region around the Talisman Sabre War exercises. We trespassed onto an area called Shellwater Bay Military Training Area, and we attempted to get in the way or disrupt the live firing exercises to slow down the preparations for war. As well as Graham and myself spending 3 days on the Shellwater Bay Military Training Area, four people were arrested outside the Western Street Barracks, which is a large staging area for the war exercises. Talisman Sabre is some of the world's largest military training exercises. Last year there were over 20,000, I think the number was 25, but I'll stay safe and say over 20,000 US troops came to Australia and trained with about 8,000 Australian troops. And they say it's sold by the Australian government as promoting Australian defence and security, but it's actually about incorporating Australian military resources into future US invasions.
There you were in a military training zone. Were there bullets whistling past your ears? What actually happened, and what did you do, and how did you manage to get arrested there?
After we got on, we actually spent a couple of days walking around. We camped at various sites and sat around and drank tea and talked about peace. So the idea was that this is an area of war making, and we wanted to bring just a little bit of peace building onto the area and try and get in the way of the war machine. So there was just two of us, and it was a very large area, so there weren't bullets. We heard some firing happen. My gut instinct was that they were actually firing blanks somewhere around near us. We didn't have bombs dropping around us or bullets whistling. We stayed predominantly in an area that seemed to be not having any live firing exercises, and we weren't resourced enough to try and find it. So after a while on the military base, we stood in front of a road and just tried to hold up a military convoy as long as we could. And I ended up standing, blocking some United States Marines who were, and spoke to them in depth for a long time, for about 3 hours whilst the police came to get us. We held the Marines up from doing their war preparations for 3 hours. And that's something that one or two people can do on their own. What could more of us who are committed to peace do if we tried?
Did you suffer serious consequences from that action?
I was convicted. I pled guilty. So I got a conviction and a small fine. But I'm a registered teacher and it didn't affect my teacher registration in Queensland. So I'd say the consequences were pretty minimal compared to those who suffer at the other end of war. If you look at what's happening in Gaza and Iraq now, my consequences were nothing.
You were talking to me earlier about peacekeeping in Palestine and wanting to move those projects to West Papua, where there's a lot of conflict and oppression of the West Papuan people. Would you talk to that for me?
I might not talk specifically about West Papua because I'm not really authorised and I don't know as much about it as I hope to do in the future. And I'll just distinct between peace building, which is the word I used, and peacekeeping and peacemaking. Peacekeeping and peacemaking is usually aligned with what the United Nations does in armed interventions. So what we talk about with peace building is relationship building, and it's always unarmed. So it's using the principles of non-violence to try and build peace, the peace dividend, that is groups of people who want to work for peace and justice as opposed to violence and oppression. There's a group that I work with called Christian Peacemaker Teams who have worked for the last 25 years to do that work in areas of extreme violence and oppression. So they work in Colombia, which has been torn apart by civil war. They've worked in Iraq since 2002. Palestine for about 15 years, and they've also worked in other areas where they're no longer active, in Mexico, Haiti, Nicaragua, to try and bring parties together to talk about solutions and build relationships rather than killing each other or accepting the power of the gun from other foreign powers.
You spent some time in Palestine. What were you doing there?
I was actually, thanks to Christian Peacemaker Teams Australasia, they funded me to go in March 2013, and I went and spent 4 weeks on what they call a delegation. And in a delegation, you travel around the area. So we traveled around Jerusalem and Hebron, and you see the work of CPT, and it also gives you an idea of the conflict zone. One of the key things that I took away from that is I remember before I went thinking that this was a two-sided conflict and there was both arguments and you needed to keep an open mind. And when you go there and you see that what's happening to the Palestinians is worse than what happened to black South Africans under apartheid, you understand the brutality of the occupation and the dehumanisation of the Arabs. When I first landed in the Middle East, I considered myself a pretty open-minded guy, but I was surrounded by Arabs, and I felt myself being scared, like, oh, there's all these Arabs everywhere, and I noticed this fear rising in me. And I realised that I'd been brainwashed to think that all Arabs were somehow dangerous or extreme. And when you look at the media around us, it's pretty easy to see where I got that. And after even a few hours of dealing with the Arabs, they're the most lovely, incredible, hospitable people I've ever met in my life, and I absolutely love them. And the Palestinians are suffering heavily under, because of both this preoccupation we have in the West with painting the Arabs as demons and extremists, and with control and the geopolitical control of the region, and while we fund this totally racist, terrible Israeli occupation of the Palestinian areas. It's literally killing and wiping the Palestinians out from their homelands where they've been for tens of thousands of years.
Was it you that was escorting children through checkpoints to school?
Predominantly, the work we do there is checkpoint monitoring of kids and teachers while they go to school. CP and the Israeli army, they control these checkpoints in the occupied areas of Hebron, which is internationally illegal and morally bankrupt. They control key sectors of Hebron, this large city that the Israelis would love to have. And for thousands of years, the Palestinians have had free access and walked through there, but now there's checkpoints to go to key areas, and kids walking to school are subject to Israeli intimidation and bag searches. And one of the things that Israelis can do if they're not being monitored is they will hold kids and keep them late for school. I did witness one boy of about 12 or 13 years old on his way to school that was that Israeli soldier pulled him to the side just outside the checkpoint and said, "You need to stay here." And immediately, I was actually on my own that day, but I'd been told what to do. Immediately, I looked at the time and I went close to the Israeli soldier and just pointed out that this is a kid. The Israeli soldier was gruff with me and a bit abrupt and told me to go away and that I had no place there. So I did walk away, but I kept my eye on the time. And after 15 minutes had elapsed, I went back to the Israeli soldier and said, "That's been 15 minutes. You can only hold that child for another 5 minutes." And straight away, the Israeli soldier let him go. And I was like, That's a good day's work. At least I was able to manage to do something for someone. And that's regular harassment, and they do that. And that was just a child, and they do this regularly to teachers. So imagine going to work Having to go through a checkpoint all the time because it's assumed that you're a terrorist, and then being held up for hours at a time and not being able to get to your place of employment, how that would affect not only your work but your lifestyle and your view of yourself as a human being. It's degrading.
There's a peace camp coming up at Swan Island at the end of September. What's going to happen there?
Swan Island is about an hour and a half west of Melbourne in the Port Phillip area, and it's a secretive military training area that was exposed by Fairfax a few years ago. And a group there trains called SAS 4 Squadron. And I know lots of people associate SAS, the Special Air Services, of being the best of the best military people. But 4 Squadron actually work directly under Special Operations Command, SOCOM, which is the United States Military Special Forces. And they go wherever they're told to go. SAS 4 Squadron have been involved in wars in not only Afghanistan and Iraq, but also Kenya, the Sudan, Somalia. They're doing what they would call precise operations, but what I would call murder and destabilization of the region. They bust into people's homes, they kill people. It's never been documented because it's so secret, but American special forces who operate in the same way have been documented by Jeremy Scahill in a book called Dirty Wars, and Australia's SAS 4 regiment is part of that. And what they're doing are fighting illegal wars that are contributing to the destabilization of the world. So Swan Island's where they train. And since 2010, there's been resistance to the Afghan occupation and Afghan wars there, and this ongoing integration of Australian Special Forces into US Special Forces and illegal dirty wars. So since 2010, we've been trying to disrupt that training. So in 2010, two activists managed to get onto the island and shut down a military communication system. And then in 2012... was the next successful action where a group of about 40 of us actually managed to shut the gates. There's one bridge over to the island, and we managed to block the gates and shut the island down for a week. So for a week, there could be no training operations happening there. In 2013, last year, 17 of us managed to gain access to the island. We managed to open the gate and walk across the island to further disrupt the training. And in 2014, from September 28 to October the 7th, we're going back again to try and disrupt the war making and build a culture of peace.
Can anyone join in the camp and come along and find out more about peacemaking, peace building in Australia?
Yeah, it's actually one of the great strengths of Swan Island Peace Convergence. And if you just Google Swan Island Peace Convergence, you'll find our website, is that it's a great community building exercise. We're expecting about 80 to 110 people this year. Last year was bigger than we expected. And some people do blockades and get arrested, and some people just come and learn and be part of the peace building community. We welcome as many people who are interested in peace, whatever your background is or whatever your expectations or how far you think you can go in terms of being arrested. It is not an arrestable action. It is a community building, peace building project, and the major part of peace building is learning to live together and work together in whatever capacity you feel led to do. So come along, no matter what your politics or your background. If you're interested in peace, then you're welcome at the Swan Island Peace Convergence.
You're also working with a team planning for an action in 2015 near Rockhampton. What's that one about?
So last year, Graham Dunstan and I walked on to the Shoalwater Bay Military Training Area to disrupt the Talisman Sabre War exercises, which the government calls war games. I don't think that games and war can go together because games are fun and war kills people. So Graham and I walked on, and while I was on there, I was inspired by the idea that in 2015, there's going to be lots of propaganda around the story that violence is necessary to bring peace and justice. We need violence for a secure, stable world. And that's going to be around the centenary of the Anzac Day, which is where Australia has this cultural, almost religious belief that white Australia was born on the shores of Gallipoli, where we invaded Turkey. And I believe in the story that we invaded Turkey because we were told to by imperial masters, and it led to death, destruction and mayhem. So in 2015, when we're going to be assaulted with this propaganda about violence leads to peace, I was inspired to see if we could get 100 people to come together and say, actually, what leads to peace is love, peace and non-violence. And we have to do that in the face of violence and to work against violence. So in Australia's largest war exercises and largest preparation for future wars, in the ongoing build-up of the US military presence in the area, I'm trying to gather, and me and my friends, it's not about me, we're trying to gather 100 people who will come onto Shoalwater Bay next year and disrupt the military war exercises. And hopefully we can do that.
What's one of the aspects about working in the peace movement that you most enjoy?
About 3 years ago, I left full-time teaching, and I still do some high school teaching, and I quite enjoy that. But the depth of relationship you get with people and the people you meet from all walks of life and that you never would have thought you would be able to have a relationship with or have a friendship with is something that comes from peace building. When you engage full time in this work, you get to see the potential of humanity, and it's incredible to see. So the relationships you build and the fun you have along the way are like nothing I've ever had before in my life, and it's an incredible gift.